this is not the first time you've stayed in this hotel, is it?
What do you mean?
What did Harry Grave feel about the blood when you screwed?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Horse!
You're sick! Oh, no! No!
Is that your friend out there? Relax, for Christ's sake, relax. Look, trying to drive me mad, scare me, it's a plot.
What is it you want to know?
Everything. Did you talk about the Lotta murders when you fucked? Was he religious? Did he take sugar in his coffee?
I have a child with Harry Gray.
Welcome to the Three Film Egos. I'm your hirsute host, Isaac Jensen, and with me as always is Utah's whitest black child, Clayton Godby.
The guy just needed to die.
And our resident vegan dreadlock Portlandier, Ryan Cragen.
Who fucking even likes that guy? I don't know.
This is a film discussion podcast where we each pick a film based on a predetermined theme or topic and then talk about anything but. There will be tangents. There will not be spoiler alerts. Consider yourselves warned. On this episode, serial killers.
I'm going to be eating some sushi while we're recording this one. So okay. If I sound chompy, fuck off.
All right. So, I guess sushi is appropriate for serial killers.
Nothing screams serial killer like eating sushi. All right.
All right, where are we starting on this one? We have man bites dog, element of crime, and perfume.
I could start anywhere. I could go ahead.
Yeah, these movies are all way different. Go for it.
Oh, yeah.
Very different movies. The element of crime I selected because it was the first Lars von Trier film that I ever enjoyed, and I loved it. I think I started with, like, Epidemic and then watched something else that I didn't like, and I had given up on him. But then this movie changed my mind, and now he's one of my favorite directors. I don't know. I must have just started in the wrong place. But this deals with serial killers through a detective who's hunting down a killer of young girls, and he's using a method outlined in kind of his friend and mentor's book, The Element of Crime, which you try to get yourself to think like a criminal, and that will help you solve a crime. And it's just so weird. It's hard to really follow exactly what's happening the whole time. It's hard to feel out what's real and not, and it will sometimes not really shoot the action of what you're hearing. And there's a lot of voiceover reading parts of this fictional book, The Element of Crime, and I just really like the whole tone of it and the color scheme, which they stick to very, very strictly, of like warm colors, oranges and reds and a lot of black. And
like
then just
sepia.
Like almost like watching an entire movie, sepia, and then little highlights of blue every now and then. And those are pretty much the only colors used in the whole movie. And I thought it was really inventive. And it kind of goes the way of a lot of serial killer stories and psychological thrillers toward the end. And you see it coming. Like I thought the ending was really predictable, really. But I still enjoyed the ride, and I thought it was a good story.
Yeah, this is a weird movie, from the opening scene to the last one. I think what I liked most about it is how surreal it was. I was expecting, you know, a pretty serious movie. And what you end up with is the weird, surreal, dystopian future world. And you just...
It's really
wet. You have no explanation of really how it got here, or what the fuck is really going on. And it's just, there's weird, sweaty guy. And also, like that's your introduction to this movie is some weird sweaty guy, and you have no idea what the fuck is happening. And I kind of felt like that the whole movie. Mm-hmm. You know, he's talking to his mentor, this old crazy man, trying to solve this crime, and it's just so bizarre. But I appreciated everything about this movie. I felt like every aspect of it was really well thought out. I think this is exactly what von Trier had in mind before he shot this movie, I imagine.
Yeah, I think it's a fair assessment. It seems like with all the von Trier I've seen, it feels like what we're seeing is exactly what von Trier had in mind. I haven't seen too much of von Trier, but like Clayton said, he's one of my favorite directors too, just because he dares. I mean, he takes risks.
Oh,
he does things totally out of the box. This was my, I think, first exposure to von Trier, and I think I bought this film blind, because this was back when I was on a huge Criterion Collection kick, and I would go to the Gray Whale and just buy whatever used ones looked interesting. So I picked it up, watched it, and I was just blown away. I was like, at the time, it was probably one of the most original things I'd seen, just especially with the color tone and how everything is sepia, with those bright blues randomly throughout. And unlike Clayton, though, I did not see the ending coming. I mean, I probably wasn't looking for it. I wasn't really thinking about where it was going. I was just kind of, you know, in awe and just being taken where it was taking, you know, where it was going.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I've just seen movies like Identity and Fight Club, where there's someone trying to figure something out about someone else, and then he ends up being... And I swear, well, I guess Identity, he is the killer. There's your spoiler for this episode. there was no warning. I just kind of said it.
there won't be any spoiler alerts, Clayton. Remember.
No. So at the end, he ends up being the killer that he is trying to find. He is using this method from a book of trying to get into the mind of a killer. He doesn't recognize he's already there. So he's following all these footsteps, and he starts calling himself by the name of the killer, and people recognize him by that name. So I guess that was kind of the Tyler Durden effect for me, I kind of picked up on it, maybe because I watch for those kind of things in psychological thrillers from Fight Club on. I'm always watching for that.
So are you saying that he was the killer the entire time? Like, he was the one who perpetrated all the murders from prior to that?
I felt like, you know, and the ending of the film is such that you still don't know what is going on or what happened. But that was, I don't think the entire time, but I think he adopted the role of the serial killer before the final murder beforehand. I think he became that killer somewhere along the way, and several of those killings were his. And that was my interpretation, which might be incorrect. It's kind of a confusing movie.
Yeah, it's very unclear, but I don't follow as far as you do. I think he ends up getting so far into the mind of the killer. It's like he discovers this pattern in all the murders and thinks that because, you know, the murderer's not around, that there has to be some kind of continuation of the pattern, and ends up assuming the pattern himself, and ends up inadvertently killing, you know, in the exact spot and in the exact same way that the murderer would have done. So I don't know that he necessarily was the murderer up until that point, but I think it's really more about the implications of this, you know, psychological side of crime and police work, and how if you become so intimate with criminal activity, does that kind of put you on the same level? Does it, you know, does having the mind frame of a criminal kind of indict your own morality?
No.
Well, but that's the question.
It's,
there you
No. The actions that you do are what you should be worried about, not necessarily what you think. So, I mean, in his case, he takes it too far, which is the whole point.
Right, yeah. And I see exactly what you're saying, Isaac, but I feel like, I don't know, I felt like there were certain cues at the climax when he actually kills the little girl. He's there to protect and so that he can catch the killer. I felt like there were cues, and I can't remember them specifically, that he was kind of is losing his mind and then reverting back to something that had been part of his past, which happened also with his strange, like, prostitute lover, that I feel like there was breaking down of his mental barriers that were keeping him from the knowledge that he was a killer, and then he was reverting back to old behavior. Then he'd snap back into his, I don't know, his identity as a good detective that he wanted to perceive himself as. But again, the film is so surreal and strange, and it kind of jumps around so much that, I mean, that may or may not be a correct way to look at it, the way that I'm seeing it.
No, I think there's some merit there, especially because of his drug use. And I guess, I mean, there has to be a reason why it opens in that big fat psychologist's office. You know, why
right.
Is the psychologist trying to make him go back in his mind, you know? And then at the end, why is he seemingly trapped within his own mind? I mean, there has to be a reason for that.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe you've touched on some of the reasons that I had thought that when I saw the movie. Is what I guess was seeing was the psychiatrist with the monkey on his shoulder was trying to get into his mind and kind of get a confession out of him or
could be
something.
Yeah. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. One thing in particular I think this movie excels on is its single shots that go from one place through a series of action into another place without cutting. I think the one that's most prominent is when they go to the beach from the helicopter, and it's got the police chief, Osborne, I think. The scene starts with him and his partner coming down this sandhill, yelling at Fisher through a megaphone. And we go through, like, four different groups of people running, going into places, doing whatever they need to do, all pretty well choreographed. And it moves into this big pit where there's a bunch of horse corpses. And when the camera gets to the guy who's in the pit, he looks up at the camera, moves the horse out of the way, and there's a human hand sticking out. Then the camera continues up the pit, and then we see Fisher and the Asian prostitute he's with, and how she kind of recoils in horror, and they take off, and then there's huge, bright explosions in the background. It's all one continuous shot, and that's super ambitious, especially this is Von Trier's debut feature.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, he'd done a bunch of shorts prior to this, but this is his first full-length film.
I didn't know that. That's impressive.
Yeah, I noticed a bunch of those, and it was a really big part of the style of this movie, and one of the things that was more disorienting about it, as well as, you know, the repeats and the voiceover and stuff like that. But, like, I remember when he's on a bed that's pretty much just box springs, kind of like they're on this really uncomfortable looking spring bed, and the camera zooms past the characters on the bed and goes through the springs, and then beneath kind of what looks like would be a floor underneath it is a completely different setting somewhere else.
Yeah.
And those kind of movements with no cut at all are really impressive. It was really cool.
It became obvious to me how much of a fan of Tarkovsky Von Trier is. I hadn't seen any Andrei Tarkovsky, the Russian director. I hadn't seen any of his work prior to seeing this. But now that I have seen a lot of his work coming back to this, I can definitely see how much of an influence he was on Von Trier. I mean, especially with the opening of shots where the camera is on a character and they're kind of facing the camera but looking off in the distance, and then they'll turn around almost, you know, 180 degrees to go off to whatever action they're going to. That is something I've seen all throughout Tarkovsky's work, and this is all over The Element of Crime.
Yeah, I remember, and that's a big part of Von Trier's style in general, but I remember thinking all through his movie Antichrist, wow, this really reminds me of Tarkovsky. And then that film was actually dedicated to the memory of Tarkovsky, so he's definitely a large film, or a big fan of Tarkovsky, and borrows a lot in his style from Tarkovsky. Yeah, I think the overall tone of this film was kind of strange. Like, the setting is clearly kind of in a future time, but everything looks so uncomfortable. Like, Fisher looks uncomfortable. It always looks hot. Like, he's sweating all the time. And, like, there's water trickling down the walls in interior seems there are big holes in walls and people don't seem to be bothered by it. And there are people always laying down like on tools and on like beds with no padding. And it just, the whole time is just a really uncomfortable kind of movie to watch. And I wondered if that was not necessarily in the story, not necessarily a literal interpretation of the places and what was going on there, but if maybe Fisher's mind is a little bit warped and he's projecting his interior discomfort, and that's the reason that so many of the things that you see are uncomfortable or fragmented or kind of strange. It's a kind of a representation of his inner strangeness. I don't know. I was trying to figure out why the setting was like it was, and that was all that I could come up with, really.
Did you figure out why there's so much water everywhere?
No. No, that was my only feeling, is that he didn't like water or something, and he sees filth all around him or something like that.
What's your take on the obsessive water, Isaac?
On all the what?
On all the water. Everything seems wet in this movie. Maybe it just seems like wet to me.
Yeah, no, everything does. Either everything's mm-hmm. covered in water or is underwater. I mean, especially look at the, like all the case files he has to go find are in this vast cavern, you know, pit that you have to rappel down to. And it's all under like 3 feet of water.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It's one of those things where I'm just so fascinated by the style of this movie. I didn't really think about it. I was just like, okay, this is what we're doing. But I think Clayton might have hit on that because of the bookended, you know, voiceover with the psychologist. Maybe it is supposed to be a representation of his mind, like, or the experience within his mind. And maybe it's just as simple that, you know, the body is 70% water.
Yeah, I felt like, you know, where did he go? Was it Stockholm where was the main setting of this movie? I think so. And
I don't know. I don't remember. I mean, it's definitely
Cairo
somewhere.
I remember it said specifically what city he was going to.
Yeah, not.
That might be in the opening.
But
I don't remember.
I felt like the... Oh, it was just Europe in general. He moves around cities in Europe.
Yeah.
I felt like in the story of this film, Europe didn't really actually look like that. But that was his interpretation and the way that he recalls it. And in that way, I kind of like the title of this film a great deal, because in the story, The Element of Crime is a book to try to get you inside somebody else's mind. And this movie is a way for you to see things like Fisher sees them, to get inside Fisher's mind in a really crazy, literal way, is the way that I see it. And so I think it's the perfect title for this movie.
I think we have a bingo.
Golf clap. You can just cut that in later, Isaac.
I'll try and find
a
one.
Ballpark.
No, I'm sure you can definitely find some stock footage of a golf clap.
Yeah, or I'll just record one of my own.
But you have
low
to have
clap.
You have to have a crowd, though. I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm sure you could find it. Just Happy Gilmore, YouTube. You're fine. Gold jacket, green jacket. Who gives a shit?
Cool. Should we move on?
Yeah, I definitely dug that movie.
Should we talk about Perfume?
Okay. That's my cue then.
Ready.
I'm ready. Perfume is directed by Tom Tykwer, I believe is how you pronounce his name. I'm not sure. I believe it's based on a book. Follows Jean-Baptiste Grenoir, who is a French-born peasant who wants to learn how to preserve smell. He's got an acute sense of smell that's inhuman, and so he ends up trying to make perfumes. And along the way, he discovers that the best olfactory sensation happens to be people. And so, in an effort to save their smell and make the perfect perfume, he ends up killing women and getting their scent. I like this movie a lot, and I think a lot of people do. Where a lot of people fall off the wagon is the climax to this movie. And that is what seals the deal for me, that makes this movie just perfect. I love endings I don't expect. That's why Magnolia has probably the best ending of any movie ever. It rains frogs. This is a close second, and if you haven't seen this movie, we're definitely going to talk about spoilers. It basically ends, you've got two parts of, I think, which are the climax. You've got, well, maybe three parts. You've got the last killing, right? He finally gets the last girl that he's after. that he chases for a significant portion of the movie. Makes his perfume. There's an epic orgy, which is probably where most people fall off the wagon on this movie slash book. And then there's the ending where he gets completely consumed by the villagers. Right.
I would agree that as I've talked to people about this movie, those ending elements are where most people just enjoy it less.
Yeah, my mom's read this book. She hasn't seen the movie, and I've talked to her about it. And she's one of the people that fell off the wagon when the giant orgy happened.
Is it in the book?
Yeah, I believe the giant orgy. I believe it ends just like the book, from what I've heard.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I think it's fairly close adaptation.
Oh, good. Yeah, I'm kind of like you. I up until the climax, I was really confused as to why this wasn't a bigger success. And then the orgy commences, and I'm like, oh, yeah, people probably didn't care for this much. But like for me, it totally made the movie.
Yeah.
Like everything in that last like 20 minutes just elevated the movie to like a whole different level. I could probably find a lot of flaws in this film. I found it extremely enjoyable.
This movie, the first time I watched it in particular and subsequent viewings, I've seen this movie more than I probably should have. This is probably my fifth or sixth viewing of it. It makes me focus on my sense of smell a lot more. Particularly after I watch this movie, I just go outside and I just focus more on that sense. I feel like it's kind of one of the weaker senses that we have. We know we're very visual and auditory. That made me appreciate smell a little bit more.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
Yeah, I would say from a story point of view, I think the climax kind of completes it and was completely unexpected. I'd agree with you there. My biggest problem with the movie in general was the narration was just kind of annoying to me. I don't know. I was just found myself annoyed but all the time, like spelling things out for me and like telling me what to think and like in such grand tones and all that. Just I guess that kind of makes sense that it's adapted from a book and it's trying to get you deeper into the story than you could be just from watching it and seeing and hearing everything, trying to get past those two senses and maybe get you to feel the scent a little bit more. But I did not like that narrator.
Really? It's the same guy that plays the evil guy in V for Vendetta.
Really?
Yeah. No. He's not evil. The Chancellor, right?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. He was also the bounty hunter in Proposition.
So
yeah,
it's
kind of feel like Clayton.
Yeah,
it's not that I didn't like the tone or the story behind it. I just thought there was way too much. Like I felt like I don't know. I mean, I really thought a lot about it. I don't think there's really any other way you can get from the beginning of the story, you know, his birth to where he ends up, you know, going through the tannery and all that without the narration. And Clayton said something that made me think of this. Maybe the point of the narration, they overdid it, did it too much, so you get out of the focus of sight. You don't focus on what you're seeing. You're focusing on a different sense, which may prepare you for focusing on your sense of smell as opposed to the visual sense. Although, I don't know, that may be too intellectual an interpretation of that.
Yeah, I'm not so sure that's what he was going for.
But I also think, just on the visual aspect of it, especially through the whole kind of exposition, it did an excellent job of visually portraying what the sense of smell is like.
Mm-hmm. Especially in the tannery, when you see him kind of crawling around that creepy yard. And just some of the images, particularly in the French market, when he's born.
Yeah.
Just talking about it, how it's the most filthy, disgusting, the worst smell, like Paris is the smelliest city, and this is the smelliest part of Paris in the world, and this is where he's born. And I don't know, the images of like the fish guts and just the piss and the shit all over the ground, you know, and she just has a birth underneath this table and just flows right out of her, and it's just disgusting. I don't know. I definitely made me believe that it was filthy smelling.
Yeah, it was so visceral. I mean, the production design was fantastic because it produced a response in your mind of the smell, and you could almost actually smell it.
Yeah, it shows things that you know that stink that you recognize, because everyone knows the smell of bad fish, you know. So when you show fish guts and nasty fish heads, then you immediately think of ugh, rotten fish. And that's when you think of rotten fish, it's probably the smell more than anything that you associate with it.
Yeah, most disgusting things.
Right. So it's just thinking of, so if we just show people a bunch of things that they associate with, you know, smell, I think that works. Moreover, I love the story. I love the story. I don't know, for some reason I just really like the characters in this story. I think it's well written. I think the adaptation for the screenplay is excellent. I think the acting is, come on, Dustin Hoffman, you can't go wrong.
It was a strange role for him, but I definitely enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder the perfume making. I wonder if that's even close to how was done or is done.
It felt authentic to me, so even if it's not, it's a good portrayal.
you believed in the base,
yeah,
the heart.
Well, I mean, yeah, the entire focus of the film was to portray the power of scent, and I think that's why the climax works so well, is because you spend the first, you know, hour and a half building up these, you know, visceral responses to the images you're seeing, and, you know, and you're smelling them, and then when he busts out the fragrance he's got and people just burst in a spontaneous orgy, it rings true in the world of the film.
It's because he captures the scent of, you know, what, 10 perfect people and combines them into one. I don't know, it just it feels like it's love is kind of what happens to everybody. I don't know, a lot of people might just interpret this in a sexual manner, but I think the orgy is the least perverted orgy in the world. I think it's I think it's purely an expression of just complete content and love of everything. You know, it's completely innocent, I think, which is bizarre because it's a big orgy in the middle of a square where they were going to hang him. You know, they were going to kill this guy. They're going to lash blows on every, you know, part of his body and watch him die. And then they smell him and then just immediately, you know, burst into spontaneous orgy and love each other.
I think that might be why people didn't like it, is because of the fact that nobody has ever experienced anything like that as a response to any sense. I don't know. It doesn't seem like something that could happen in our real universe. But what Isaac said about the sense of smell being so important to this character and to this universe of this movie, I hadn't thought of that. I think that I at first was like confused, very confused by the orgy. Like, what is going on? How could this happen? Why could this happen? But then I just figured, I think that this is a story about a character who's very, very good at what he does. And this is, that's the final cap on the idea that he is perfect at his art because he has so much power because of his ability that he can make even that happen, even if it's not something that could ever happen in real life. I ended up liking it, surprised myself, and liking it in the context of this movie for that idea. He's the master of scent.
And that was his masterpiece.
It was definitely a masterpiece.
Yeah, but I agree with the aspect of the orgy being just a completely authentic expression of affection and love for the people around them. But it got me thinking, you know, these are primarily probably extras, you know, that are getting paid maybe like $72 for a day's work. And to find that many people comfortable with that kind of scene must have been a huge undertaking.
I have no idea how they did it. Yeah. And there's even, there's even shots where they're pretty much just fucking in the background, you know. So I'm sure it was quite a bit of work to pull this off because there are dialogue scenes in the middle of the square, you know, while this orgy is happening, you know, it's after the crescendo of the moment when he steps off stage and the dad approaches him, you know, you're not going to fool me. And they have that dialogue. It's still happening. Like,
yeah.
Oof. It seems like a nightmare to shoot this.
But back to the acting, I think the character was extremely interesting, but I didn't think actually beyond his craft, his passion for scent actually had any depth. You know what I mean? It seemed like his entire character was encapsulated by his obsession over scent and being able to capture it and preserve it. There wasn't really anything more to the character.
I don't think he had a choice. You know, from the minute that he is born to the minute he dies. I mean, well, his whole youth, you know, in the tannery, he doesn't really have time. And then when he loses that original, the first girl with the red hair that he, you know, that he's stalking in the square,
mm-hmm.
you know, when he loses her, that's sort of a changing point, you know, and it just changes his focus completely. It gives him his purpose, its meaning, you know? And so I feel like that's why we focus so much just on that, because I feel like that's literally the only point in that character's life where he's decided that he's not just going to work in a tannery anymore, and he's going to figure out, you know, how to capture the most beautiful thing that he's ever experienced and preserve it.
Well, that's true. Now, I'm not saying it's necessarily a bad portrayal of anything. It's just because his entire character, it revolves around this obsession, there wasn't really a lot of room to actually, you know, give him some more human traits. He wasn't really fully humanized.
No.
I would
he's
agree
a,
with
he's
that.
He's a murderer. You know, he's a serial killer. I don't think we're going to find too many human emotions in this guy.
Yeah, that would have been a completely different movie.
I would agree with you, well, I guess both of you then, that he didn't have a lot of depth, but I don't think that the purpose of the movie would have been felt if he did have anything else that he wanted to do or any other desires or any other thoughts other than creating and preserving scent that is beautiful. I don't know. That was the purpose of the character.
How do you guys feel about the very last and, you know, the ending when he goes back to the original spot where he killed his first victim and lost her and then just pours the rest of his masterpiece on himself and gets completely consumed by the people?
Maybe a bit grandiose, but I think it also was a completion of that idea that he only had one thing that he desired, and that was to create the perfect scent. Once he'd done that, like, he has nothing left to do. He doesn't have any other human traits, as Isaac would put it, to rely on or to do, so why exist? And so I kind of liked it, mostly liked it.
Had you seen this movie before, Clayton?
No, this was my first time.
Ah. Did you like it then?
I did. I did like it a great deal. Yeah, and I don't know. I think it's just the way that it gets you into the film. Like, it's so beautiful. And I liked the quick focusing effect. I think there was something that got you into sense about the way that a certain shot would start out blurry and then focus in and then focus back out. There was that kind of effect that it would happen really rapidly too, like over and over, really quick shots. And I think there was something about that was alarming and beautiful and kind of unique about this movie. At least for that was probably my favorite part of the movie, actually. And at least for that, I was really glad we watched it.
The scene where Dustin Hoffman testing the perfume, I wished I could smell what he was doing. So bad. That's kind of what it was frustrating. It's kind of bold to make a movie where you're focusing so much on a sensation that you can't really give to the audience.
Yeah, it's true.
It's like making a movie about music where there's no sound.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's what it would be like. John Waters has tried to do smell-o-vision movies where you buy the DVD and it's got a scratch pad thing with it, but imagine how different this movie would be if it had like scratch this card at 5 minutes or something.
Yeah.
No, I think there's differences there. Like, because a movie about music that you can't hear, I don't know. If you're shown images, I guess you could conjure up musical ideas in your head. But with visuals on scent, I mean, it like all throughout this film, especially there were cutscenes of images of different things that invoke a response in your brain that trigger a memory of the scent, which is different.
Yeah.
Right. So, are there visual cues that we could show people that trigger sound? Like,
definitely sound, but probably not music. Probably not a specific organized sound.
Yeah. You could show somebody hitting a gong with a hammer, you know, and you're going to think of what that sounds like because it's overpowering.
That's true.
But I think you have to go for those really powerful reactions to make it work, at least in a semi-universal way.
Yeah, and I guess you couldn't really complete a song with just visuals, but it's kind of like in this, all we got was single shots of single scents, not necessarily, we never got to enjoy the culmination of the combinations of the different scents.
That's what Ryan was saying, is he was frustrated, especially by Dustin Hoffman's scene where he was trying to recreate the perfume but was unable to. All the combinations he was trying, he wanted to smell the differences that were going on in that scene.
Oh, definitely,
yeah. I wanted to smell the orange blossom, goddammit. Yeah.
All right, so the climax?
Do you want to go back to your ideas off the end, Isaac?
Yes, the climax. It's essentially he commits suicide, and I guess in a certain sense it makes sense because he has completed his masterpiece, his finest work. He has shown that he can, through the power of, you know, his ability to combine fragrances and capture fragrances, to pretty much control is not the right word, but elicit a group reaction of such magnitude that, I mean, if you look at it from the mind of like an artist, if you get to that highest perfect work, is there really any point of continuing? You know, I mean, think about all your favorite artists, probably not still working, but from the past, where you can pinpoint a point in their work where it went downhill.
Right.
You know, they achieved their greatest achievement and then were never able to get back to that. That's kind of what that felt like to me.
I feel like Kurosawa kind of went through a situation like this, where he made movies that everybody appreciated, then he sort of hit this down point in his career and just didn't think he could make movies anymore. And I believe what was it, Ron, that was the first one that he made when he came back?
No, it was Kagemusha.
Kagemusha, my bad. I feel like it's kind of that scenario where he just felt like he had plateaued. He hit his peak.
Yeah, well, he had a lot of trouble with studios. But
oh,
he definitely
got
super depressed, and he even attempted suicide at one point because he wasn't working.
And I think that this character in the movie is different from Sawa in that Kurosawa is a full human being with like other considerations like family and community and other things, but this character has nothing else but this one desire he's had his whole life. So once he fulfilled that, it's even different than just an artist who, even if they continue and they don't hit anything quite as good, they're still making something that can affect people. He's done what he's going to do. That's why I like the finality of the ending.
Where else could he really go from there?
Yeah, he doesn't have friends or anything to share in his success.
In the end, I think this is a fairly non-violent serial killer movie. I mean, there's definitely some killing, and he, you know, there's some disturbing scenes where he's scraping fat off of bodies to, you know, grab their scent. But it wasn't that visually gruesome like some of the other movies that we watched. I don't know. It's kind of, could you make a story about a murderer beautiful?
They did,
you know, and so
yeah, exactly.
That's kind of fucked up.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I, the focus wasn't necessarily on the serial killer aspect. I don't know. I it seems like to me that's a part of like an inherent killer instinct in humanity that we all want to distance ourselves from, but. There are elements there, I think, in everyone.
Yeah, he does what he has to get where he wants to go. But I don't know. I kind of, we've discussed, you know, he's not really a human being, so it's kind of hard to relate to him at all.
Exactly.
Yeah, almost impossible, I'd say. Like, he's just so strange and twisted, kind of.
He's definitely twisted.
I just like the choices of actors in this movie. Really good. Like, probably the three main people would be Ben Whishaw, Dustin Hoffman, and Alan Rickman. All three of them are so cool. Like, I'm a big Dustin Hoffman fan.
Yeah, I think Alan Rickman's voice is just, I don't know, he was born to play period pieces. I don't know why.
Yeah, I could see that.
Well, do we have anything else about this one? I guess not.
Yeah,
we can go to probably the most disturbing of the three. Maybe the
Abs- I think it was.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll agree. It's my pick. It's Man Bites Dog. It's a pseudo documentary by it was a collaborative effort. I mean, there's three people listed as director, and it's the three main stars of the film. And it's essentially a documentary whose subject matter is a serial killer. They follow him around on his murders, and they capture, you know, real moments with what would be a real person. It just so happens that this guy goes around and kills people. But it still has what you might expect from other documentaries, in that you see the everyday ins and outs of someone's life. But, you know, he's a serial killer.
Yeah, it's also a black comedy.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's so black that it's ridiculous sometimes.
Yeah, and I think if someone doesn't know what it is going into it, if for some reason someone thinks this is an actual documentary, then they probably wouldn't keep watching. But there are certain elements that start to expose its comedic nature, which I almost think is a detriment. Like, the first time I thought they were starting to hit it on the nose a little bit is after the first sound guy gets killed in that kind of warehouse thing. Mm-hmm. And then it has a shot of one of the guys, documentary filmmakers, like, kind of crying and weeping and talking about him. And it felt a little too over the top. And it's like, you know, this kind of feels out of place. And then it became super obvious when they're following him on random kill, and they run into another film crew following a different serial killer. And I thought, okay, yeah, this is definitely a comedy. And I don't know. It just felt like, for the rest of the tone of the film, those kind of felt out of place because they're calling attention to its own comedic nature, which I thought was a mistake. But this is a film I've seen a couple of times now, and it's definitely one you probably see because of the shock value at first. But I also think it's an incredibly fascinating and important film.
I would agree. I would say that some of the parts that strike me as the funniest were actually the places where I saw the most, like, social commentary about and irony, like really, really great writing irony that I liked. Some of the times when it seems like this is kind of a character, well, it definitely is a character study of this one killer, Ben. And it was when they when through his dialogue, it would show that he had some sense of morals about certain things, that it was really funny, but it was also really awesome. Like, just, he was so aware of these certain things and codes that he felt were the way things should be, yet he is a serial killer. He doesn't follow, it's not like an anarchy that he believes in. He has certain codes that are okay, but these other social codes that are definitely absolute to most people, like, you don't kill people, just
or rape
slip
them.
Right past them. Yeah, or rape them, or steal from them. I guess that's why I wasn't bothered too much when it was clearly trying to be funny, when there are clearly lines that were there to be comedic, because I also saw some of the greatest value of the film in those same lines.
Yeah. No, don't get me wrong. I found myself laughing hysterically at some of these lines, but it seems like just as soon as you start laughing a lot, there's the most fucked up violence that you've ever seen. You know? Like, yep. This is disturbing shit. Like, I've seen some shit, and this is disturbing shit. And so it's just so weird to kind of have that juxtaposition between comedy and extreme violence. And that's kind of the whole movie is talking about, which is, it drags us in. It sucks us in because humans just want this violent shit so much. You know, it just, we can't not enjoy it. I don't know. I feel like it's a social commentary on our, you know, everlasting need for violence. At least that's kind of how I perceived it.
No, I definitely agree with that, but I think it goes a little bit further because it's, you know, it's a documentary style, and it starts to explore the concepts of objectivity in a documentary filmmaking, and how at no point do these documentarians ever step in because they have to remain objective. They can't influence, you know, any of the outcomings of their subject. But by doing that, they become complicit in the activity. And then it shows that as, you know, the further the film goes, they start to participate. Ben, the serial killer, starts asking for their assistance, carrying bodies around, or even helping in the outright murder of people who try to get away.
Or raping women.
Yeah, that too.
It's very interesting, this movie.
That's why I think it's very important, because it's one that I think promotes in a high degree of discussion because of the implications about the nature of violence and the lust for violence, but also about the complacency in, you know, observing violence.
Yeah.
How much moral responsibility you have to stop something that you're seeing. I found that really interesting. Yeah.
There were some fucking hysterical lines in this movie, though.
Oh yeah. No, see, Ben, the killer, he's extremely charismatic, and
oh,
I think that's part of the genius.
I feel like he's the one that sucks the documenter, or he's the one that sucks the crew into helping him out, because he's so charismatic, I guess is the word that you'd use for it.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of the opposite of what the issue was with Perfume. I mean, here we have a character who's very human. I mean, the point is to humanize him, so you are totally in this state of kind of awkward disgust that you like this guy, but he's one of the worst human beings you've ever come across.
Yeah, exactly. They were really good at that because of what you were talking about. It's so much like other regular documentaries of like a musician or something, where you kind of get inside their family life and their friends. You're there for one of his birthdays, and just all of this stuff that makes him definitely a person. And outside of his work, he would be a sort of likable person. So that's probably what makes it all the more disturbing, is to have to associate the idea of a murderer with this funny guy. I like his line, once I buried two Arabs in that wall over there, facing Mecca, of course.
Right. Yeah, in that construction
so
site. Yeah, the scene where he's trying to convince him to go get food, go get dinner, it was just ridiculous. And they didn't want to go, and there's that awkward banter.
Yeah, that felt so authentic.
We have plans. We can't do that.
All right, well, let's figure it out myself. Whatever.
Yeah, okay, guys. I guess we won't get sardines over there. It's on me. Go ahead and call. We can reschedule. I don't know. I think it's a brilliant movie, but it definitely gets so ridiculously violent that it's kind of hard to watch sometimes. I also felt like maybe it didn't end so strong. I don't know. Maybe by the last 20 minutes, I felt like I had kind of seen enough. Because we don't really learn anything about his character that we didn't know from the first 10 minutes of this movie.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, we're just walking. We're following him around, and we're following into the same loop pattern of senseless violence, and then actually we're going to get to know this guy a little bit more, and he's going to charm us, and we think he's a nice guy, and then all of a sudden he just fucks shit up again. And it kind of just repeats the same thing to us, but I think that's kind of the whole point, which is, why do we keep watching it?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, why do we still... I don't know. This movie made me think a lot more that I can't really explain, but it's a heavy movie. I don't know. I think I'll definitely watch this one again. I'll watch it again, but not for a while, I don't think.
Yeah. There was definitely a lot of distance between the first time I saw it and this time for this. But like now going into it with the mind frame, knowing this is black comedy, this is satire, I think it's easier to watch the next time around. Like I could probably sit and watch it again because I think it's so brilliant. But yeah, after the first time I saw it, it's just one of those where you have to let the shock die on before you can see it again.
Yeah, and there's a lot of shock in this movie.
Really? Am I just so twisted? I wasn't all that shocked in the movie. Maybe because I picked up really early, this is a funny movie, you know, and this is fictional, you know, and so like I was expecting like crazy murders and stuff like that. I was less affected and more entertained by this movie.
Really?
And it definitely had things to think about, and it stuck with me, but I felt fine. I'd watch it right now.
Yeah, I think I was taking this movie more seriously than maybe some people do, and I think on a second viewing, I will try not to take it as seriously. But I wasn't approaching this as a thriller or just a comedy, you know? I was approaching it more as a drama, and I wanted to get invested in the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I'm trying to get invested in this character, and it's just, he just doesn't make a fucking sense at all, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's definitely original.
Oh yeah. And I don't know that these guys have actually gone on to make anything else.
Really?
Well, I would imagine they've done something. I think the acting's really good. I mean, Ben's ridiculous.
Yeah. And I think, I probably shouldn't say anything I can't back up, but I think I heard that the scenes with his family were all real. Like, they didn't tell his family at all what they were doing. And I think even the scene where he's in jail, they told him, like, he was picked up for shoplifting or something, or I don't know, some silly like that, which may be why I think they're his real family.
Oh, shit. Now I have to watch it again.
That's really interesting. I hadn't heard that.
I'm looking up the
in this actor's career, but he's done a lot since.
Yeah, I'm looking up the IMDb of the guys listed as directors, and they only show this film and a short film they all did together prior to this film. So I think they've gone on and done other stuff, but not in a directorial capacity. I think one of the most disturbing scenes in this film is his birthday party, when the one guy's like flirting with the girl he likes, and he ends up shooting him. And he just continues eating the cake while everyone else kind of sits there, kind of covered in blood. And then after a beat or two of feeling uncomfortable, they all just kind of continue like, oh, this is just Ben doing, you know, what Ben does. And I think that kind of furthers the point of, you know, complacency with this kind of thing, where you become intimate with a person, and that almost includes, you know, excuses for their bad behavior.
That was the saddest scene for me, because that's where it's revealed that some of his friends aren't really friends. They act out of fear of him in the affection and the things they do for him. And that was where, somehow that killing was where I liked Ben the least. Like, the other ones, you don't know those characters, you know, but this is in front of his friends and everyone. At his birthday party, everybody's being nice to him. That guy's really not that much at fault. He's just unknowingly flirting with the wrong girl.
And it may be because this is the only killing he does where you see a clear motivation. The rest are just done blindly.
Completely blindly.
Mm, good point.
They all have their own merit. I mean, he explains this to us in detail why he's doing it. You know, old ladies always have money in this area of their house. That one's personal reasons. It's not for monetary value or just for fun.
Right.
Interesting movie.
Definitely not what I was expecting at all, but I intentionally try to know nothing about movies before I see them. And this one just kind of caught me off guard, because I was expecting a drama. Maybe that's why it took me long, because I was just, Jesus, this guy's fucked up. But I don't know. I've heard of people not knowing whether or not this is a real movie, which is a bit ridiculous. If you can't pick up on whether or not this is an actual fucking documentary, you shouldn't be watching this movie.
Because don't they all get shot at the end?
Yeah, dude. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. How could you not know this is, you know, a movie? But how many documentarians are going to walk around watching this guy snuff people out, you know?
Exactly.
Hopefully not many.
This is probably one of my favorite. I would call this a mockumentary. Because it is comedy, even though it's very black, very dark, and very violent, I would call this a pretty comedic film. I'd say this is one of my favorites in that kind of subgenre of kind of pretending to be real, to some degree at least. I mean, it's self-realized enough to, you know, make jokes. Like any mockumentary, it's only effective if you know it's not real, kind of. But I'd say this is one of my favorites, up there with Best in Show and A Mighty Wind and those.
Waiting for Guffman, man.
I gotta see the end, because I remember not liking it.
Waiting for Guffman?
Yeah.
You will. You'll like it. I promise.
Yeah. Well, I remember I was taking an intro to film class at a UVSC. It was my first semester there, and I heard some people raving about it, and so I went to the library, picked it up, watched it, and I was less than impressed. But I'm sure my tastes have changed now. I'm sure I'll appreciate it now.
Same guy that directed Almost Heroes, man. Christopher Guest is a genius.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I know it. I'm,
I don't know. I don't like that one as much as This is Spinal Tap. And it's just because I'm in a folk band, but I really like A Mighty Wind. But
Best in Show is probably my favorite. Oh, it has my favorite of his characters. When he's talking about – when he does the hound owner, I just shit my pants every time I see the scenes when he's the hound dog's owner. I'm going to shut up about it and just definitely see that movie again.
So So apparently there are people out there who don't know if this is, if Man Bites Dog is real or fake.
I know.
There's a thread on IMDb. Title is this real or fake?
Wow.
And the question is, yeah, this may sound like a stupid question, but is this movie a real documentary of a murderer, or is it a movie set up to mimic a documentary? Wow.
This is my whole point. If you can't figure that out, you probably shouldn't be seeing this movie.
Yeah.
People shouldn't see this kind of violence unless they hopefully can handle it.
If I thought that the violence that was in this movie was real, I'd be so freaked out. There's no way I could even watch this movie.
No shit.
It's awful. That'd be scary. That would be the scariest footage, the scariest movie of all time. Watching these murders, if they were real.
Snuff films do exist. And there are people that are into that kind of shit.
Yeah, like
just fucked.
The Passion of the Christ, right? That's a snuff film.
Is this real or fake?
Nah,
Passion of the Christ is great.
Is it really?
I have never seen it, but the concept is great. Let's make a bunch of money off of killing Jesus.
It's a very bloody film. It's one of the most violent films I've ever seen, I think.
Yeah.
It's not worse than Man Bites Dog.
It's so sadistic. I don't know why even Christians would want to subject themselves to that kind of film.
I remember hearing the sentiment like, if I have to experience and see in bloody detail the suffering, I'll appreciate it more when it's a gift type, gift death, I guess you could say, but I don't know.
It's all horrific.
Yeah, that Jesus theme park in Orlando, they actually recreate the whole, Jesus walking with the cross on his back and whipping and him getting nailed to the cross. They recreate that in fucking theme park.
Ew.
Yeah, I'm shit you not.
Wow.
Sounds great. I mean, and it's like musicals too. It's so ridiculous. I don't know. I'm sure they probably have dinosaurs with Jesus riding them in the same place, but who knows? All right. So when it comes to serial killers, which one was the best? Just kidding.
Well, yeah.
That's so rough. So
which one was the best at killing?
Probably. I think that's no question. Man Bites Dog.
Ben was a skilled killer. He was good at it.
A master of torture. I liked all of these movies, though, which is good.
Yeah, me too.
All excellent.
I think of the three, the one I want to return to the most is Perfume, but it's the one I've seen the least. But, I mean, that just was so entertaining.
See, I'd watch Man Bites Dog again before any of the others. I don't know. I've seen Element of Crime maybe that's why I wouldn't return to it as quick. I've only seen Man Bites Dog this one time. But Element of Crime is one of my favorite movies by one of my favorite directors. And Perfume was beautiful to watch. I don't know.
I think I would watch more Lars von Trier before I go back to, until I've seen his whole, his whole array of work. I probably don't think I'll rewatch this one. But I'm sure I will get around to it eventually. I think the problem is Man Bites Dog isn't really an enjoyable movie for me that much right now. I don't know.
Give it time.
I must be sick. I was so entertained.
it may have just been the mindset that I was in when I watched it.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
I may just have not been in the mood for Ben just fucking people up for 2 hours.
Yeah, I think I can validate both points. Like, the first time I saw it, I think I was in a similar mind frame to Ryan in that I was, in the mood for a serious kind of drama, get myself into it and just. But I think I was also prepared. I'd gotten myself psyched up to be shocked, so that might have been part of it too. But this time around, I knew what I was getting into, so it was almost fun to watch.
Maybe, yeah. I'm gonna give it another shot. I'll definitely do that again. But I mean, prior to watching the movie, I just knew it was about a serial killer. But I was assuming it's a Criterion. I was assuming it was gonna be some kind of a drama, not a comedy. There's not that many comedies that are Criterions.
That's true.
Yeah.
Which black is fine. Comedy. It was black as fuck. This is as black as it gets.
My favorite.
But good topic. Yeah. Good topic. I think Serial Killers might be a fun one to revisit again if the movies are that good.
Agreed.
Yeah. Happy October, everybody. Here's all your killing.
To get involved in the discussion, you can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/threefilmegos, follow us on Twitter, @threefilmegos, or email us at threefilmegos@gmail.com. You can also comment at threefilmegos.podomatic.com, where you can also donate and subscribe to the show. Music provided by 90s Television. You can hear more of their music on Facebook. On our next episode, Monsters. We've been the Three Filmigos. Thanks for listening.